Welcome to Think Big with Dan and Qasim. Join host Dan Melnick and Qasim Masood as they explore big ideas, limitless possibilities, and engage with visionaries, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders who dare to dream big. Get inspired, motivated, and find practical tips for personal growth. Think big, dream bigger, and ignite your potential.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Our guest today, Ben Rode. Ben, it's great to meet you. Great to have you on. Please just let us know where you're calling in from, first of all, and what you do for a living with Eventful Suites.
Yeah, thanks, Matt. Good to be on. I'm in St. Paul, Minnesota here. My company, as you said, Eventful Suites. So we do, it's candy, dessert toppings, really think like mix-ins, what you would get at maybe like a Sonic Blast or a Dairy Queen Blizzard. And that's kind of family thing for a while, working with candy, working with sweets. But we've been running Eventful Suites for about 4 years. I started it with my wife and my cousin. And it wasn't really what we intended when we started. This isn't really where we intended it to go, but here we are. We intended it with the purpose of more selling to like weddings, different parties, different events. I mean, that's kind of where the name Eventful Suites came from. And we ended up finding a market for smaller mom and pop shop, franchise even, maybe bigger chains, but that were in need of some of the stuff we were trying to sell to wedding venues and stuff like that. And we were having some success there. It was kind of a side job, but yeah, we started getting in with more and more the mom and pop shops, a couple chains, and it kind of took off from there.
Yeah, that's amazing. And I was actually surprised. Like I pulled it up and I saw just like the general kind of vibe of the website. I was like, oh, I see what this is. Like this makes perfect sense. But then I realized that you're actually selling chopped versions of like real like name brand snacks, which surprised me. So I'm curious, like kind of how, why you decided to go that route instead of maybe, you know, figuring out some kind of like manufacturing for like, you know, something similar to a Twix or similar to a Reese's rather than, you know, doing the actual name brands. What kind of led you to do that?
Yeah. So the name brand stuff, like I said, it's been a family business for a while, that working with sweets. My dad and my cousin's dad are brothers, obviously, and we're kind of the first people to come up with chopping candy to go into, you know, different, like whether it be a Dairy Queen Blizzard or anything like that. I don't want to say they're the first people to do it. Obviously, people were doing it themselves, but there really wasn't anybody doing it for other companies. And so They started going down that route, and they've had quite the adventure in their business there. But that's what got us into, we had access to all the toppings were selling. So we would buy just a little bit from them, and we were really selling on like Etsy, stuff like that. These name brand items that, you know, most people can't really get unless you go to, I guess you could go buy a bunch of Twix bars at a local grocery store and then cut them up yourself. But it was kind of amazing to us how many small stores just didn't have access to that.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking. I can imagine it's probably not easy to get like, you know, this many SKUs of like these like really big brand name candies. And it's like as a growing brand, I mean, it's difficult to do, you know, anything with these like really big brands as you're starting out. So you kind of already had that set up, what your parents were doing. Oh, that definitely makes sense. And so this is all like almost 100% B2B for you now. I know you said you were selling on Etsy at some point. Do you still have like a, you know, a direct to consumer side of the business? Is it still a big part of it? Or
we do. I wouldn't say it's a huge part of our business. It's an area that we take a lot of pride in. You know, it's where we started. It's what we kind of marketed towards at first, but we've seen a lot of growth there. It just, you know, what businesses can buy, it can dwarf the volume that maybe your standard consumer would need for like a wedding or something like that.
Right.
You're talking a one-time thing versus all summer or all year for some of these stores.
Yeah, that's interesting. I guess I didn't even think about the fact that this probably is a very seasonal product for a lot of places. I mean, obviously, like in upstate New York where I am, or even in the city, there's this place called Stewart's, and like they're just like the coffee and like ice cream haven. So they have stuff like this like all year round. But I guess probably your typical like B2B, like smaller shop, like, you know, place that does like, you know, like an ice cream stand or something, is probably only open 6 months out of the year. So how do you kind of grapple with that with your purchasing power and like manufacturing of these things that you have on such a seasonal basis?
You're right. It is difficult. And I think that's really where a lot of the benefit of working with us comes into play, is a lot of these companies, or these, especially a smaller mom and pop shop or a smaller franchise business that you might be, they probably don't want to deal with those kind of logistics or dealing with that storage. So it was a learning curve. I'm not going to say it was easy by any means.
Yeah.
Getting used to having more and more. And, you know, there's been times where we bought an item that was maybe selling really well in October. We figured it was going to sell, you know, for the next couple months, and it really didn't. It ended up being a seasonal item. And you're stuck with that, and you kind of have to take the L there. But you pay attention to those things, and you just kind of grow from it.
Yeah. I mean, it's obviously, you know, one of the biggest things I talk about in these podcasts all the time is like not dwelling on mistakes and learning from them and not like forgetting about those things and, you know, using them to, you know, deal with future problems as they come. So I think you have a really good, you know, healthy perspective on that. I mean, you learned it. Maybe, like you say, you took the L that 1 year, but you know, now you know, and you can optimize things for that. So I think there's a great perspective on that. And then, so I guess, you know, when you think about, obviously, a bunch of SKUs on here, I see there's almost seven pages. ways of things. So you obviously have like a ton of different SKUs. I mean, like, how do you decide even where to stop? Like, with like the amount of like candies and stuff that are out there that might be of interest to your B2B partners.
So I always tell our customers, everything you see on our website is because a customer came to us and said, you know, I'm having trouble finding this. Can you try to get it for us? And obviously we had the connections to start with our parents' business, and that was a great place to start, but it ended up being a lot of the stuff people were looking for well beyond that. And you get these connections of, well, I know this person might be able to sell this to me because they have a little bit of extra. You try to start small wherever you can. Like, our viewpoint has been, it's always been better to, you know, under promise and succeed on that. So we might bring in a small amount and say, you know, we only have a little bit at a time, but if this keeps going, we'll definitely work with you. And I think a lot of customers appreciate that mindset as opposed to, you know, trying to overpromise something that you can't fulfill.
No, it's so true. And I always ask this question on the podcast, which is like, you know, if you could go back to the beginning of founding your brand, if you would do anything differently, like, what would that be? I'm curious to hear your answer to that too. But one of the most common answers I find, especially in like the food and beverage CPGs kind of space, is like, just start local, carry your relationships further in the beginning stages, rather than just thinking about like exponential growth at any cost. Because those relationships over the long term are going to be the things that keep you when, you know, something like COVID happens or something like, you know, anything crazy like that goes on. You have like this kind of loyal and like very personal connection with like some of these like smaller mom and pops or even franchises that you work with. You have that like, you know, nice like growth mindset perspective to cater to them. So it's a good perspective, and it's something I hear a lot from other people and something that you're already doing. So that's fantastic. And I'm just curious, you know, you're in obviously in you know, Twin Cities area. Do you do most of your business kind of like pretty local to your immediate area now? Or are you more like, you know, broad, like coast to coast now? Or what's your kind of outlook on that?
Yeah, I perked up a little bit when you asked that. And I'm really glad you did ask that. That's been a big push for our company. So we're in the Twin Cities. We also have a warehouse in Salt Lake City, Utah.
Oh, cool.
Our growth was really weird at first. We really caught the attention of a lot of national businesses. And it's small businesses, but they're spread out throughout the whole U.S. And luckily we were set up where we could ship, you know, direct to these businesses. But we didn't really have a huge presence in Minnesota, even though that's where we started. We have a couple of customers that have been with us for a long time, and, you know, since we started, and that's been great. But one of my big pushes for the last half of last year and going into this year was, we can beat almost everybody's price in these areas. And, you know, for some reason, we just got so locked in on this, well, we want to be national. And to an extent, we definitely are. But I think we overlooked how easy it might be to get some of these businesses. And I say easy, but really how good of an offering that we have for these businesses. I mean, there's no reason we can't be the number one choice that they need for anything. And that's been really a big push for us. But we do ship all over the country. We even ship to Hawaii sometimes, to Canada sometimes. Canada gets a lot more difficult, but we're happy to look into it for our customers if it makes sense.
Yeah, that's great. And I mean, obviously another big like kind of pain point, I'll say, I find in, you know, people shipping, you know, packaged goods coast to coast, no matter where you're based out of, is obviously, you know, shipping to California and New York, not the same as shipping to like, you know, in Ohio or Indiana or something, no matter where you're based in. So how do you kind of grapple with those, like, you know, variabilities and costs, like shipping maybe, you know, from where you are to like, you know, the far Northeast or like to Northern California, rather than maybe somewhere closer in your immediate area?
Another great question. One of our biggest challenges is, so the stuff we ship, chocolate items, not all of it can melt, but a lot of it can melt, especially when you're shipping down to Arizona. And that was a big push to open our warehouse in Utah. The faster you can ship stuff, the less likely it is that it's going to melt. So
true. Yeah.
We use dry ice. We use a combination of ice packs. We've tested a million different liners. Those have been the toughest variables that we've run into. And I wish I could say there was some easy answer, but it was a lot of trial and error of what works and what doesn't. And also getting to know, you know, we work with both UPS, both FedEx. They both have their strengths in different areas. And I think getting to know, okay, where does it really make sense for us to ship with UPS? Where does it make sense for us to ship with FedEx? That's been big for us. Definitely, you know, locking in on like the type of materials that we need to use, finding that balance of like, well, we don't want to go super expensive or anything, but we also can't have our product melt. We guarantee our product too, which is, you know, at times can kind of seem stupid, especially when it's 130 or whatever in Arizona, but we take a lot of pride in how we ship it. So, you know, I think it's just kind of a full scale trial and error. I don't really know how else to describe it.
No, it's fair enough. And I mean, I think it's good for, you know, anybody who might be starting out maybe in a CPG capital venture, like what you guys are doing, to understand that is like, you might hear on this podcast, you might hear from somebody else that the best way to ship something that has a potential for melting or that needs to be frozen or whatever. But at the end of the day, every product's different and you're just going to go through those growing pains. I mean, it just is what it is. There's no silver bullet with these kinds of operative things and logistical things that you have to figure out on your journey. So I think that's actually the best perspective to have, is just knowing that you're going to continue to have to do that. Even when you think you have it figured out, something else is going to happen. The UPS or FedEx are going to change the way that they ship. They're going to change their stops. It's going to be in the truck longer than it used to when you ship to a certain place. And I think that's the best perspective to have, is just like knowing that trial and error is going to be a growing pain. And if you can do it with an open mindset, I think that's the best way to figure out the most optimal way to do things. So yeah, no, that's amazing. And
one of our big perspectives is just the goal of our business is to create a great customer experience. And I think when you keep that in mind, you're going to make mistakes sometimes. I mean, it just happens. Your warehouse manager might make a mistake. Some staff might make a mistake. But I think when you have the goal in mind of, okay, we did ship this wrong and it did melt, that's on us. We'll send it to you. We'll make sure that it looks good. And I think, you know, customers are appreciative of that, especially when you own up to like, okay, we learned from that. It's not going to happen again. We'll make it up to you here. And sometimes it can be easy to be like, it's the end of the world when you do make a mistake. And it almost causes your reaction to not be sincere to a customer. I think customers can surprise you when you do have a very customer service focused attitude that they're there to work with you.
Yeah, no, it's a great point. I think it's something that's kind of gone by the wayside in, you know, the past maybe decade or so. Customer service is just then like really shoddy in my experience as a consumer of online brands. Is it's not always easy. So, you know, to be able to approach that with kind of an open mindset and a really direct voice coming from directly from the company, whether you're selling B2B or direct to consumer, I think I'm not surprised to hear people really like react well to that. So, you know, those relationships are everything, obviously, for a business, whether it's relationships with if you're selling D2C almost all, or you're doing a lot of B2B business like you do, the relationships are everything, right? So, yeah. So I guess to that point, what kind of strategies do you try to utilize? And like, you know, thinking about, you know, okay, we want to open up into maybe this state, or we see this franchise that we think could be a great fit for us because they're not using like authentic chopped candies like this for what they're doing. Maybe they're like, you know, some kind of like off brands or whatever the case might be. How do you go about like getting in touch with them? So how much like cold outreach are you doing to like forge new partnerships? And how much do you get just kind of like word of mouth from your reputation, like you getting recommended from other people you already work with?
I would say it's definitely a mix. I try to do an hour every day of reaching out to customers. And I think, you know, part of that is obviously we want new business. But I think even when you hear, you know, the reasons why people might not be buying from you, why they might not be a good fit, it kind of helps you hone in on, well, these people might be a good fit. We've discovered a couple kind of key areas for us. Seasonal, a lot of stores will do seasonal items. We're a great fit for that kind of thing because it's risky for companies to bring in a lot where they might work directly with like a, you know, a name brand like Hershey Mars or something like that. It's risky for them to order the minimum amount that they need to order there, but we're doing it for them. They can work with us. They can order a case. It'll be sent right to them. They need more. We can get it to them in 2 or 3 days. We've kind of honed in on, okay, they've got seasonal, they got rotating menus. And that's a really good sign for us, but it's honestly surprised me. I mean, I have different conversations with new customers and, you know, they'll tell me a new reason why they need our product. And you kind of go, oh, okay, well, I'm going to start looking for other people that might fit that bill. So I think it's important to keep your mind open. That's for sure. That's something I've learned. You never know where you'll find them. I think the other aspect is, you know, you hear about it a lot. And I've watched several people on your podcast who are involved with like digital marketing, but we really want to make a strong push when somebody Googles something like, how do I find chopped Snickers that we're popping up? That's easier said than done. I mean, there's kind of the Wild West sometimes with SEO and those things can change a lot, but that's also a big push. We want to make sure that we're on top of that. We're doing everything we can.
Yeah, no, that's great. And to that point, I wanted to ask you this as well. It's like, obviously from the outside looking in, I mean, I see this product, I think it's on an ice cream stand, one of those places like, you know, make your own soft serve with all the mix-ins in it and all that kind of stuff. So I know you mentioned like, you know, along the way, you kind of find some maybe other use cases that you didn't see coming that you hear from, you know, potential customers or current customers. So is there anything that been, you know, that's kind of like surprised you as far as like the way that, you know, some of your partnerships or customers are utilizing these kinds of products?
Yeah, I would say there's definitely surprises. I'm trying to think of a good example, though. We work with some brands, and to be honest, I'm not sure if I can share their name or not, but
that's fine. Yeah.
They've seen rapid growth. And I think seeing how creative they got with their growth and seeing, I can think of two on the top of my head. One was kind of stagnant for a few years, and then they changed some of their products up, and they've really taken off. And I think, you know, just seeing the different ways that it might be switching a cake to a shake, you know, something not, you know, you're not reinventing the wheel there by any means, but
right.
It is a big strategic shift for these companies, and to see it pay off like it does can be pretty fascinating and sometimes surprising. I mean, sometimes you're going, you know, is that actually going to work? And you got to give them credit for trying.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. And it's got to be super gratifying, obviously, as somebody who's like applying something for a fair price and like authentic products like this to see it help, you know, brands grow to exponential growth. Sometimes you see it. It's got to be an awesome feeling. I can definitely see that. That's awesome.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So I am curious to hear your answer to that question I mentioned earlier. You know, I know you said you started this about 4 years ago, you know, knowing everything you know now. Obviously, you probably don't have any regrets. You know, you don't say like you don't want to change anything because you clearly learned like, all your things. You seem to have a pretty like mild mindset when it comes to, you know, overcoming things like that. But if you could go back and give yourself maybe one piece of advice, if you were to start over again, knowing everything you know now, what do you think that one piece of advice would be?
Yeah, we got super locked in when we saw pretty big growth from year 1 to 2, you know, which is super exciting. We got a couple of pretty big customers that just really changed the outlook of our business. And we kind of got locked in on, we need to keep doing everything as low cost as possible because because it's the only way we knew. I mean, I think a good example was, I mean, we use like UPS, FedEx. Well, we were loading up a rental truck with UPS boxes. And it would take us 2 or 3 shipments a day to fill it up, drop it off at our local UPS, go back, fill it up. And that was just us trying to save like $100 or whatever it is to have UPS come pick up.
Right.
At some point we're saying, okay, we're wasting so many hours doing this.
Yeah.
And it was kind of, I mean, looking back now, you go, how could you make that mistake? But you just get so locked in on this is the way that we do things. And I think that's kind of a lesson moving forward. But also, you know, you want to be conscious of your costs. You don't want to run too high in any area, but you also want to make sure that you're not missing the opportunity when it's there because you are trying to run so thin. So it's finding that balance. And I think, you know, when we first started, we definitely erred more on the side of like, well, we don't want to spend much money. We don't know if this is going to last or not. I would have said, okay, slow down a little bit and figure out, is there a better way to do this?
You know, it's a fair point. I think it's good advice. Is like, there's obviously extremes on both sides. I mean, in the beginning stages, you always want to err to the side of like, you know, not hemorrhaging money and not spending too much. But clearly, you know, there's obviously, you know, there's a way to be too much on that side of the ball as well. When then I feel like, you know, probably most people, you know, they say whatever, 90% of businesses fail. And I think that comes down to a capital issue sometimes. I think most people find themselves on the overspending side. But it's funny you say, like, there definitely is a, you know, an extreme on the other side where you're wasting, maybe not you're wasting money, but you're wasting a lot of your time and doing things like that when you just get into that motion of like, you know, doing everything's the cheapest way possible, which is good. But after you experience some growth, like you said, I think that's really good advice and an interesting perspective, not an answer I get to that question a lot. I think a lot of it is like, you know, don't spend too much money. So that's actually a really interesting answer. I appreciate that.
I will say, yeah. The flip side, you know, I'm glad that we had the mindset of we never really felt like we had a ton of capital to just spend needlessly. So I think that does kind of force you to be creative. But yeah, like you said, it's important to take a step back and does this logically make sense for what you're doing, or are you just being cheap to be cheap? And I think ultimately what you want to do is give your customer the best experience and you want to make it, you want to make it as efficient as possible. And that's not always going to be just the cheapest option.
I think it's another interesting perspective to think just like, you know, there's value in spending money on certain things sometimes. That doesn't reflect show as a reflection of like, you know, direct input and output, like, you know, maybe taking some logical steps to ensure that you're shipping faster or, you know, shipping it with better quality for the customer experience. It's a really good point too. I think a lot of entrepreneurs can get stuck in the trap of just thinking like input money and output money, and anything that's not outputting money is probably not worth it. But there are times when it's worth it. Like, you know, when you are putting maybe a little extra money that you didn't before, it's because you're trying to create a very authentic and great and efficient customer experience. So yeah, I think it's a very nuanced way to look at it. I think, you know, for anybody listening who maybe, again, like off on a capital venture for the first time, these are the kinds of nuances and the pieces of advice that people learning along the way, and it's what I try to bring to, you know, anybody who might be listening, might be, you know, thinking about getting 2 feet in an entrepreneurship project for the first time. So I really appreciate you sharing that. I think it's a very valuable perspective, so I appreciate that. And yeah, Ben, I just want to give you a quick opportunity as well, just to, you know, plug your website, your socials, anyway, anybody wants to get in touch with you, whether it's a business partnership or, you know, maybe just somebody wants to, you know, place an order with you and just give some of these things a try. I'll let everybody know how to stay in touch with you guys.
Yeah, definitely. I would say, you know, anybody, feel free to reach out to us. There's partnerships in so many different areas I would have never guessed originally. So, but yeah, you can reach us, our customer service email, which I get access to. I see a lot of the customer service stuff that comes in. It's hello@eventfulsuites.com. Please send us an email. I love talking to, you know, even if you just have questions for maybe a business that you're starting up, happy to talk to anybody. So besides that, if you're in the Twin Cities area, Salt Lake area, we're really doing a push there. So please reach out to me. I'd love to talk to you, especially if you have some sort of suites business.
Awesome, man. Well, Ben, I just want to say thank you again for coming on, man. I really appreciate your time and your insights. I wish you the best of luck, continued success, and I look forward to staying in touch, brother.
Yeah, thanks, Matt. It's good talking to you.
Thanks, Ben. Thanks, everybody.